I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
From the icy reaches of Montreal, Canada, Solid Gold Effects are effects pedal creators who constantly reinvent the wheel with their wonderful devices. If you, like us, are looking for something more than just another chorus, fuzz or flanger, then that's exactly what Solid Gold Effects do best. From the Oblivion, a quadruple-voiced flanger with a whole bunch of internal dip switches, to the Lysis, a polyphonic octave-down fuzz modulator, Solid Gold are just a great shout if you want to do something different, make weird noises, or if you're just looking for something a bit more fun. Check out their range of ultimately original soundscape devices at solidgoldeffects.com. We think they're wicked. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast, Season 2, Episode 8. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Episode 8.
Matt Knight.
Mario.
And Mark Packham.
Can't believe you're still actually running with the Season 2 nonsense.
Well, if you'd been on more than, this is what, your second episode this year, you'd know that it is the season thing. We don't even talk about it anymore. It's just how it is. Season 2,
We talk about it most weeks.
Well, that's not true. Anyway, we've only got two more episodes of this season, and then we'll be in Season 3. So, that's obviously
What's
not
wrong
true.
With you?
No, that's not true. But it is the first episode in of March, and that does mean that we're donating to a new charity. Each month we're picking a new charity. Guitar Nerds is donating to a new charity. So far this year we've done Help Musicians, we've done Refuge, and this month we're going to do Endometriosis UK, as it is Endometriosis Awareness Month. Yes, endometriosis affects 1 in 10 women, and those are assigned female at birth. Yet, socially, it's often considered taboo. So lots of people are doing the Take On Our 1 in 10 fundraising challenge for March. So people are doing runs, baking, group quizzes. In fact, my partner, Emma, is recording 10 covers, actually using the Isotope Spire and obviously filming them. She's putting 10 different covers out this month to raise awareness and money for Endometriosis UK. So, yes, Guitar Nerds will be donating to Endometriosis UK. We thoroughly recommend you check it out, dear listener, endometriosis-uk.org. There's plenty of ways you can get involved and donate there. Now, this week, we're not going to really do much news because there isn't much. So we've got exciting topics instead. But I guess, first of all, it is lovely to have you back, Mark Packham. Absolutely,
hello.
Absolutely wonderful. And
Just popping in. Say hello, exactly. Check out how badly you've ruined it, and then I can go again.
Exactly. But of course, you told us something that shocked us before we started recording this episode. You told us that the other day you played guitar for 5 hours straight. Now, the Mark Packham I know, he hates guitar. He hates the idea of playing it. He certainly hates the idea of practicing. So what is this thing that has made you want to actually sit and play guitar again?
So have you heard of this thing? It's called COVID-19. It's pretty big at the moment. It's pretty on trend. No, literally, I mean, there's nothing else to do, is there? So I've been playing a lot of guitar. And the thing that's really kind of inspired that is, in between the last time I was on the podcast and now, I picked up a set of Boss Wazza Airs, even.
Boss.
And I honestly... I think they might, outside of the guitars themselves, they might be the best guitar thing that I've ever bought. That it feels like when I first bought a guitar and realized, okay, I can do power chords, right, I can figure out all these songs that I like. As you mentioned, it wasn't this weekend, but a couple weekends ago, I was like, okay, I think I've got some time at the weekend to play a bit of guitar. I'll get the Wazza Airs charge them up overnight, which, Matty, correct me if I'm wrong, gives you like, what, 6-7 hours of charge total?
Yeah. Yeah, it depends how much you mess around with the editor and the settings, which I'm guessing, Mark, you probably stuck to one.
I mean, as I mentioned before, we started recording, you guys were like, oh yeah, what have you been doing with them? And I literally took them out of the box, made a Marshall sound, and that's the only thing I've done with them. that's a lie, actually. I've had a bit of a poke around in the app, but the only sound that's like saved on the headphones is basically a kind of driven Marshall.
Getting those delays going for all those U2 songs that you've been
There's no delays. I'm not using any of the effects in there at all.
Oh, what, you're just playing the U2 songs without
I like it dry. So I've set up a Marshall-y sound. I'm using the what's it called, Matty? The atmospheric stuff, the ambience.
The ambience mode. Yeah, I'm using the surround mode where it's behind
I'm not.
You.
I'm using just... the static mode, is it? Where the amp stays in one place behind you.
Mark, right.
Can I ask, you said you a Marshall-y sound, but the Boss, they don't do things like that, do they? It's not like Line 6 where they're like, here's a Marshall thing. So you just mean like a mid-heavy driven sound. You're tonally taking it to that thing. It's not
like you can go, oh, I want a JTM 45 head or whatever. It is just, oh, there's... Matty, you'll have to remind me of the name of the presets, but it's like clean, crunch, lead, something
insane.
Else, isn't it?
No.
So they're all not the same insane. As the Katana.
I wish it was insane. That would be... I'd be on that 100% of the time. And by default, when you switch to insane, it's got an octave down and a very deep flange on it as well. Yeah. That's the real sound.
Sully Erna style.
I love it. Joe, to answer your question, whatever the a crunch or whatever it's called, that's what I used. And that sounds good with all of the guitars, although to be honest, I've only really been playing the Les Paul Junior.
Really? Oh, you've gone back to that now? Because your Rickenbacker was taking pride in place last time we spoke to you.
What happened there was the first time I really got kind of stuck in with the Wazza Airs, I was like playing, it was like after work, and my girlfriend works a little bit later than I do, and I'd like finished work, and I was straight away, I was like, I've got these Wazza Airs, brilliant, I'm going to like have a bit of a session, plug the Ricky in, because I love that, and like I was playing the Ricky, like playing along some like punk rock or whatever, and when my girlfriend was finished doing her work, she was like, yes, it's quite loud, that. It's a bit louder than you normally play guitar. And of course, because the Ricky is semi-hollow, if you've got the headphones on, you don't notice, but you're like playing guitar a bit heavier than you normally would, and it's like quite loud for anyone else who's around. So the Les Paul Junior is kind of the obvious thing to go to from that, because it's obviously doesn't have the semi-acoustic vibe to it, so it's still manageable if someone else is in the house. But also, I just really like that guitar. And for the stuff that I'm doing, you know, I'm going back and being like, again, I'm having a bit of like a renaissance, as if I was like 14 again, you know. I'm going like, I'm playing like loads of three chords, like pop punk stuff, so the Les Paul Junior is the one really to reach for that. But
are you playing to go on. I was gonna say, are you playing to backing tracks then, or are you,
because I'm playing to like records, like I'm playing through entire records. Okay. Like on that marathon Saturday when I played for like 5 hours or something, I was just going I was just going like, okay, what records do I like? So, you know, I brought up like a bit of like Teenage Bottle Rocket and just like learn every song on that record, and then played it through again at the end. And I was like, okay, I've got all this one now. And then it's like, okay, well, I like this Mr. T Experience record. Right, I'm going to learn all the songs on this and then just play that through. And they're like, you know, half an hour, 25 minutes, half an hour each for a, you know, average punk rock album. I mean, average in the term of like, you know, like middling quality. So yeah, I've just been doing that. And like this Saturday, like I said, I fancy playing a bit of bass. So I set up a bass preset on there, which was basically just the same Marshall sound, but with the bass turned up a little bit and the gain turned down a little bit.
Is that what you did? There's not a dedicated bass thing.
No, there's
there,
I mean, there, you know, I think the recommended setting is to go to the clean setting, but I mean, that's no fun, is it? So, so I went to, yeah, whatever it's called, the crunch sound, and just tweaked it a little bit for bass. And yeah, I just played like, you know, 5, 6, 7 records that I really like back to back. And it's in a time when I'm finding it, you know, there's a lot of COVID stuff going on. I'm finding it quite meditative to just play guitar for hours and hours and hours.
Do you think you prefer it being on headphones? I think the headphones are the things that I would struggle with rather than having
so much
an amp
better.
In the real world.
It's so much better for me on the headphones because, you know, I live in a flat where the walls are not particularly thick and we've got a couple of people above us and people either side. And like, I'm always very self-conscious when I've got an amp on the go. And, you know, even the Katana that sounds great at low volume, like, it doesn't sound right at low volume. You know, like any guitar amp, you need to get it up to a level that's kind of like above the noise of you just playing the strings acoustically. And I just can't do that without feeling self-conscious. With the headphones, I'm loving it. It like takes me to another world for 4 or 5 hours where, you know, all there is the rock, as it were, not the professional wrestler.
That's a shame.
Yeah, I've actually just listened to Wyclef Jean featuring The Rock for 5 hours.
The audiobook of The Rock's autobiography,
The Rock's
meditative
Rock. Tapes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I'm finding it, it's been a bit of a revelation for me, to be honest. And you know, when I'm not playing along to stuff where I'm using the Les Paul, I've been plugging in the Strat as well. Like the Strat is like really good fun. And I never really appreciated that with just the amp because again, can't really turn it up. And like digging into a Strat is very, very different to playing it quite lightly. So yeah, I've been really, really enjoying it. I think if you haven't got a set already, if there's one bit of kit that I'd recommend, probably over anything else we've ever talked about on this podcast, it would be the Wazeres. It has been a bit of a kind of life changer for me, to be honest.
Yes, yes, I can see that that's been the case. How much are a set of Wazeres?
They're not cheap, are they, Matthew? Like £339, something
yeah,
like
I
that.
Yeah, I think about 330-ish.
But honestly, I've tried so many things, like getting a Katana, playing it at low volume, plugging the headphones into the Katana, playing with a sound card and plugins and stuff like that. And it's just, I've never connected with a solution in the way that I have with these. And it's really kind of, as well as playing along to these songs, like I've been doing a bit more improvising stuff. And it's for the first time in ages, I'm like, this is why I play guitar, is not, you know, we focus so much on this podcast, and we have done for years, on the gear, because, you know, obviously, or I should say not obviously, but I would say that none of us are particularly kind of technicians when it comes to guitar stuff, in terms of like, you know, we're not the best guitar players in the world, probably Matty excluded. And so we focused on the gear, and we have done for however long we've been doing this, you know, or 8 years or something. And in that time, you know, it's been great learning more about what pedals can do and, you know, trying loads of stuff and going. And what I haven't done is played along to enough stuff that I enjoy playing guitar to. And I haven't really picked up any kind of new guitar skills for 10 years or something. And it's been wicked. I've made more progress playing with these headphones in the last 6 weeks than I have done playing guitar in about 10 years.
It's a very good point, and I think having an easy to use home practice solution is incredibly important. I think one of the problems that I have is that I chop and change everything that I use, whether that's effects, guitars, basses, amplifiers. It's all always changing. And so it's all always a struggle to actually have a consistent thing set up that I can use. And that can have a negative impact on how much you play. But something like the Wazza Airs just make it, you know, such an easy thing to do.
But again, I think once again, that comes back to what we were talking about last week, Joe, in like, why are you playing guitar and what inspires you to play guitar? And what inspires Mark to play guitar is, okay, this is this subpar pop punk record that came out on Lookout in 1994.
Love it.
And I want to play along to it. And what inspires you to play guitar is, oh, look, I'm going to pick four pedals at random and see if I can make the weirdest sound possible. And I think it's just like, in that situation, what you're more concentrated on is getting the weird sounds, which, you know, at that point, the guitar almost is, and, you know, forgive me if I'm speaking out of turn here, but at that point, the guitar almost is like kind of the secondary point of why you've plugged in all the gear.
Sure.
You know, and that's why Mark is getting more out of the headphones, I would assume, because it's just like, okay, cool, I can play these songs and not worry about my next door neighbor, John Petrucci, from rolling his eyes at me and saying, God, I can't believe he's just playing those three chords again. You know, and I really think it just comes down to why are you inspired to play guitar and why are you inspired to do anything? I think that's what it comes down to.
The other thing for me, like, Yeah. First, I would say that the Wazza Airs aren't going to be for everyone. Like, the thing for me is the convenience of it is so good because it's wireless and because I can just like plug it into a guitar, pick up the guitar, headphones are on. I can Bluetooth to my phone for, you know, playing along to stuff. It's perfect. I don't have to get any cables out. I've got a guitar in the living room. I've got the headphones. I've got my phone. That is all I need. And I can do what I want to do. If you want to use a load of pedals, yes, you can do it because you'd plug the wireless transmitter into the end of the pedal board, but you would have a cable going into the pedals and stuff. You could do that. And, you know, if you're desperate to play around with pedals, yes, it could. It could be a good headphone monitoring solution.
But it's also got all the effects. It's got all the effects built in.
It's got loads of effects built in. Yeah, and, you know, having like I said, I've only had a bit of a poke around, but there are tons and tons of effects, and there's loads of settings and, you know, all the Boss quality you'd expect. One thing for me that's been really good, and as part of the fact that it's kind of a wireless thing, is like I've realised I've really missed the physical act of playing guitar. Like, to me, there's one of the reasons that I play guitar is like, and do the kind of music that I do and do the kind of bands that I do, is like there is a physicality to like picking up a bass or picking up, again, like a Les Paul Jr. and just it's been a while, you'll have to bleep that, mark the time down, but just like absolutely gunning it for it. And like, it's because of everything that's happened in the last year and not being able to have band practices, not being able to do gigs and stuff, kind of forgotten how good that feels. And like, I know all of you guys are super into running. I'm like not into running at all. I find it incredibly boring. But like, I like physical exercise that I find interesting. You know, I do climbing and stuff, and that's how I'm kind of approaching guitar and like these kind of marathon sessions that I'm doing. You know, I'm coming out of it feeling like, do you know what? I've done some solid exercise. And I think I could only do that in this kind of headphone setup, you know, being able to crank it up, really getting into it, like just playing guitar for hours and hours and hours, stood up as well, which is something I've not done, you know, since the beginning of last year.
Oh, wow, I'd love
year.
To be a fly on the wall in your
totally. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I look like a, you know, slightly overweight 37-year-old man in the living room in tracksuit bottoms playing guitar on headphones. But it is, like I said, it's a meditative experience. And I think it's only been, I've only been able to do this because of the Wazza Airs. It's incredible. It's an incredible bit of kit.
Reverend Guitars have kicked off 2021 with their first ever S-Type guitar. In true Reverend style, this cracker of a guitar features classic looks juxtaposed with modern electrics. Introducing the Gil Paris GPS signature model from Reverend Guitars. Whilst on first glance, the pickup arrangement looks fairly standard for an S-Type. In fact, each of the single coils is a Fishman Fluid single-width pickup. These can be switched with a push-pull tone control between two voicings, a vintage voice, the classic Airy 50 single-coil sound, and a hot Texas voice for a hotter, punchier, more modern alternative. Check out the GPS and all of Reverend Guitar's mouth-watering models at reverendguitars.com.
Yeah, they are fantastic. And of course, like, nothing else is really coming close to them on the market as well. They've kind of got the monopoly on that solution.
Your check is in the post.
I mean,
Jay's going to talk about the Fender.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but you know, when you say nothing else is coming close to it, I mean, the Fender released the Mustang Micro at NAMM. And
oh yeah, I forgot about. I'm sorry, that's very rude of me. Yes,
I do think it's a good point in that it does seem to be kind of a growing part of the market. You know, the Boss had the headphones, and there was also the Pocket GT, which I guess is a similar sort of product, right, Matty? Uh-huh.
I think so.
You know, it's kind of like personal home amplification. And I think the Mustang Micro is going to be doing the same thing. I mean, there's obviously it's on a much kind of like scaled back type of deal, but there's like a bunch of preset amp models in there. There's a bunch of preset like pedal boards in there, and you know, for people, there's kind of less in the way of the people who want to go in depth and play around with the effects. And you know, the amp in the box is like a really smart piece of tech, but for £100, I think the Micro is a really, really smart piece of technology.
I think
that there will be other products that come around that are doing a similar sort of thing, because people have been cooped up at home for a year, and you know, they haven't been able to turn up their Twin or their AC30 or their Axe FX or whatever. And you know, I can absolutely see, you know, someone like Kemper doing like a Kemper module or whatever, where you can just download from your profiler, you can just download one or two presets and just like, you know, plug straight in with a jack. I think it's a growing part of the market, and that's all part and parcel of people looking to do kind of home recording and taking home practice a bit more seriously. I mean, you only got to look 5-6 years back when we were all still working in the shop, and it's like, someone come in and they say, oh, I really want like a small amp. What do you think about the Marshall MS3 or the Fender like Mini Deluxe or something? And it's like, well, it isn't what you want it to be. The long and the short of it is, it's not going to sound how you want it to sound. And there were always compromises. And now with these kind of like personal amplification products, the compromise is just, well, I can't hear it without putting headphones on. And, you know, I bet your housemates are bloody happy about that. So
yeah,
I think it's cool, and I think it's interesting. And honestly, I'm really excited to see where this market develops, because it does seem to be kind of a new sort of flourishing part of the industry.
And they'll all have to have new USPs, right? Because like, you know, Wazer Air has the wireless stuff. It's got the gyro stuff built in. Uh-huh. The Fender stuff obviously doesn't have that, it has wireless in, I should say, but not wireless out. But it's obviously at a much lower price point, so it's much mm-hmm. more accessible. Like you say, it'd be interesting if, you know, Kemper come out with something. Will it be, you know, much more expensive than the Wazer Airs, but it's got, you know, Kemper amp modeling stuff in it, you know? So it'd be curious to see like how, because I understand the Fender product, you know, it doesn't have a lot of the bells and whistles of the Boss stuff, but it is much, much cheaper. It'd be hard to see like what is someone going to do better than the Wazer Air. And I'm not saying they're perfect, but they're very, very, I think they're very, very good for the money. Something else would, I imagine, have to be quite a lot more expensive. Yeah, it's curious to see what the next product is, you know.
What Kemper want to be doing is releasing a kit for like silent disco, silent gigs. So basically, you know, you buy one module and you get like 15 sets of headphones, which, you know, let's face it, except for Joe's band, who I guess you probably need 16 or 17. 15 is more than enough for the amount of people that come to see the sort of bands that I play in and put on. And, you know, that'd be fantastic. If I could just say, right, here you go, just put these on, please, mate. They're wireless, you can go do what you want. I'm playing at a venue just down from the beach. You can just go sit on the beach if you want and listen to these. And then come back and that's it. We'll all be home in time for match of the day. Thanks very much.
It reminds me actually, Jay, of a product called, do you remember, was it the Jam Hub?
Yeah.
Which was, you plug in, it had five outs. Each one had a volume for each output. And then I think there was some guitar preamps or power amps in there.
Yeah. That was a clever bit of kit. So if I remember correctly, there was three models. There was like Jam Hub, I feel like is the right name. I can't remember, but there was like the Jam Hub bedroom, and that had four outs. And then there was, I think there was an 8 and maybe even a 16. And they were monstrously expensive. But basically, it was what you just described. Basically, everybody had their own kind of personal, like section for volume for their headphones, and also a few little areas for modeling the sound of your guitar. And it was like a writing tool. And I think it's a really good idea. The problem is that it only really worked if you were in a kind of like Dungeons and Dragons type scenario. Basically, everyone would have to be sat around a table with their guitar like there in front of them, and I just the idea behind it was like one person would be the drummer, yeah, and you'd have like
it wasn't, know, a solution to a real problem, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it. It was a really smart idea. It's just that's not how people write music in general. Yeah. I think the problem.
They had two models. Well, I will say this: it is definitely called the Jam Hub, and unfortunately, yeah, they are no longer a company.
Right. Okay.
But they had two models: the green room and the bedroom.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they
okay.
also did yeah. a portable 16-track multi-track 16-channel portable multi-track recorder.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of then.
Did the green room come with 24 beers and a case 20, of vodka?
Yeah.
24 warm cans of Carlsberg and some hummus that had been left out for 4 or 5 hours. Yeah,
that is exactly a green room.
Looking at their website, it actually seems quite sad. There's like an open letter talking about, you know, the company and shutting down, and you know, it seems pretty heartfelt. And I think you guys are saying that there's not really a use for it. I'm not sure that's particularly true, because you know, a lot of the kind of testimonials and stuff they provide are people in education settings. And places where people are using an electric kit, and then using a guitar plugged in via a pod or whatever. And actually, I think it was probably the exact product for that. It's just a case of how can you grow that?
Well,
but a great. As from what I can remember, I remember them being really well built, and I think perhaps they just didn't quite connect with the people that would have benefited from them the most.
Mark Packham.
Yeah.
I actually forgot that Roland make the HS5 session mixer, which is effectively exactly the same product.
Well, there we go.
So if you are now listening to this going, God, that Jam Hub sounds perfect, just buy a Roland HS5, which comes with USB. And into a door, you can have all five channels individually running into Logic or Pro Tools or whatever DAW you want to record all the channels individually.
Joe, if you can just edit out all that stuff Matt said about this being ridiculous idea, and just like anyone who buys this is a total wally, etc., etc.
Well, we're 25 minutes into the episode, and I think Boss only paid for the first 20, so it's
people have probably tuned out after the first 25 seconds. So
I will say that my Was Air diatribe was in no way paid for by the Boss Roland Corporation.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Very good. Well, anyway, yes, to move on the discussion a little bit, I wanted to mention briefly about the Pickguard Shop, which is thepickguardshop.com, which is kind of an international Pickguard shop on the internet.
Who would have guessed?
Anyway, so I needed a new scratch plate for my 1977 Fender Music Master, which I've got that McNelly pickup for. Now, of course, I've spoken plenty about that McNelly pickup, because what I did was pop it in a Bronco to play it, because I didn't want to put it in the Music Master, but the scratch plate on the Music Master had obviously snapped at some point in the past over where the jack was, and the person had glued it back together. But when I took the scratch plate off and tried to, you know, take it all apart so I could fit the McNelly pickup and of course the harness that I got from James's Home of Tone, I realized that not only had they glued it together, they'd also glued in all of the pots and the jack, so there was no way of me getting any of that stuff out without snapping the scratch plate. So, unfortunately, because it would have been nice to keep the original plate, but unfortunately it meant I had to get another one. Music Master scratch plates are a surprisingly hard thing to get hold of. You know, no one's really sort of just has them lying around. You have to get them custom made. And the Pickguard Shop offer a pretty comprehensive range of plates. And so I spoke to the fellow that runs them, Mark, and he's been wonderful at sourcing me and sorting out a Music Master scratch plate, which is winging its way to me at the moment. I'm very excited about it. But he was also
kind enough. What colour have you gone for?
I've just gone for like black, just like the black, white, black three ply. Just the same thing. Exactly the same thing to go on. It's a black. I love the Fender Music Masters, the old 70s ones. The Fender Music Masters, the old 70s ones, from like when you they just look so cool. I can't remember who it was. I saw a band performing on KEXP a few years ago, and their bassist was playing one. I was like, God, they just look fantastic. I mean, I think they look great in the red and in the sort of, is it a Daphne blue? I'm not sure. There's like a dirty blue that that some of the early ones with the mini tuners were done in. But the black on black just looks fantastic. So and you know what, like black with anything else, I'm like, black and white sometimes looks, you know, black with a white plate looks cheap to me. Black with taut looks a bit over the top to me, like a little too regal. But you know, black on black, it's nice, it's simple, it looks the part. So I've gone for that. But the Pickguard Shop were kind enough to offer a 10% discount to all Guitar Nerds listeners. So if you are thinking about getting a new scratch plate or accessory, then you can simply visit thepickguardshop.com and use discount code GuitarNerdsTPS, TPS for the Pickguard Shop. So GuitarNerdsTPS, all one word, and you will get 10% off anything in the shop,
How did that conversation come up then? Did you just email and say, excuse me, do you know who I am?
And, I bought the plate.
Yes.
Yes, I bullied him into it. No, I actually just bought the plate, and then I just reached out to him afterwards, just to sort of check on the delivery of the plate, and he was Mark was kind enough to offer the discount code to all of our listeners, which is very nice. He also refunded me 10% of the plate because I'd already bought it at the time. So that was
That's cool.
Yeah, that was rather nice of him. But yes, do check it out if you're thinking about making a mod to your guitar, dear listeners, and if you're thinking about joining us on the Bronco mod, which me, Naomi, and JD are currently planning, then I think it is a good place to go. Now, each week, now I'm kind of mentioning a plugin of the week, as the home recording podcast that me and Matt did was just so wonderfully received, and we were very grateful for that. And so, and there's been so much discussion on the Guitar Nerds group, the Facebook group, about home recording. And so I think every week I'm just going to mention a new plugin which I think is worthwhile for all of those people recording at home. This week's a little bit of a cop-out because it is a Neural DSP plugin again. Of course, they sponsored that series, and actually they also are doing a 30% discount code for Guitar Nerds listeners with discount code Guitar Nerds. That runs out on like the 8th of March, so you've still got a little bit of time. But I wanted to talk about what I think is one of their earlier plugins, the Parallax, which is a very unconventional. This is a bass amp plugin, but this is very unconventional in that, unlike all the others, it's not laid out like an amplifier. It's laid out as an interface. So almost the same way you would approach a modular synth plugin or just modular synthesis in general. The Parallax separates everything into low compression, mid distortion, and high distortion, and you control those things independently, as well as giving you an overall kind of EQ arc and a separate equalizer that you can have in post to tweak things. I think it's a six band EQ in post, but it's a really interesting way of dealing with everything. It does have a second screen, which is kind of an emulation of a cabinet, and it does allow you to mess around with sort of mic placement and distancing. But again, the visual and the layout is quite unconventional because they've gone for a much more kind of techie look, much less like you're moving a microphone around a cabinet, which a lot of plugins try to emulate to make it familiar to you. They've very much kept it around sort of the scientific elements of what happens when you move a mic off axis and stuff like that. So really interesting, and also absolutely jam-packed. Packed full of artist presets, this one, like, in comparison to the other things that me and Matt have been trying, stuff like the Corey Wong plugin, this one's absolutely packed full of different artist versions. Really cool for if you want a massive range of sounds and a huge versatility for bass recording. It's a good old shout. I don't know.
Didn't you bought something else this week as well, didn't you? You posted on the Guitar Nerds Instagram that Yeah, because I looked at it and I was like, I cannot believe you found more plugins to buy.
I did, yes. I think it was.
Sorry if I've just ruined next week's episode or whatever.
No, not at all. I did think about talking about this, but basically Plugin Alliance are doing a leap year sale.
It's not a leap year yet.
I know. It's great. But there's actually, as we podcast right now, there are only 12 hours left of their sale. So it will be done by the time this episode goes out, which is why I ended up not talking about it. So they're doing a leap year sale where every plugin is $30 for a couple of days. So I'd been toying with the idea of buying their Oberheim, their Brainworks Oberheim synthesizer, because it's fantastic. It's so incredibly comprehensive. You get a load of like stomp box style effects that you can add to the Oberheim for that sort of vintage like 70s 80s synthesizer sound. It's very good. It's $249, and that's why I didn't get it, because I was like, oh, I do have loads of synthesizers, and It's not like I'm a synth player. It's not like I need all these options. But it did look very, very good. But of course, at $30, I was like, well, a £250 synthesizer for $30 sounds like quite a good shout. So yeah, so I went and got the Brainworks Oberheim to add to my ever-growing amount of plugins that I barely use.
I get so many sponsored adverts, Joe, first plugins now.
Yeah,
that's the problem. You're in the system, Matty. You're in the system.
Yeah, yeah, and so many of them are like lo-fi chill hop pianos. Yeah. Which I find quite funny. I'm like, I don't want that. Although I must admit, this week I am actually trialing Easy Drummer 2. They're doing 10 days free.
Really?
I watched a bunch of videos because obviously, Joe, you use Addictive Drums.
Yeah, Addictive Drums too.
And Easy Drummer seems like the alternative.
I think there's the company that do Easy Drummer do another one, which is like Pro Drummer. So I can't remember what it was called, but Easy Drums is the easy alternative.
Yeah, it's great. It's something that I think we spoke about a lot, but you know, just being able to play along to some drums. I think one of the videos I watched is like, you know, most guitarists like playing along to something. And, you know, you write a riff and you're like, oh, it'd be good if you had some drums. And I tell you what, the like way that it works and finding drums is so good. They have like a tap to find feature. So you sort of basically roughly tap in the beat on like the bass drum and the snare. And it's like, here's all the drums that we found that match that particular rhythm or are close.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's a great search engine.
Yeah. So you just go like boom, boom, boom. And it's like, oh, here's like 200 beats that like match that. And it's like, what style do you want? And then you can open up the kit and go, where do you want to change? Do you want to change the power hand from like the hi-hat or the snare to like the ride cymbal or whatever, and do it all in real time? And it's like, here's your beat. And then it's like, do you want to turn that into a song? You're like, yes, I do. And it's like, okay. And then you drag it into this thing and it goes, what song formula do you want? And it just goes, here's an entire song for you. And you're like, great.
Oh, what? So great. you can set like a verse beat and a chorus beat.
There's basically, so say for example, you just, I don't know, like four on the floor, like easy drum beat, and then you change it so like the ride cymbal is the main power hands, and you can change the velocity and how many hits there are, and that's your like verse beat. And it's like, okay, you want to create a song, what song formula do you want? So you can have AB, ABC, or like verse, chorus, ending, or whatever. And say you just click, you know, AB, ABC, so like, you know, verse, chorus, end, it will automatically just create a song for you. And then you can go into each section and go, oh, I want to change it slightly. Or can I try this? And you can drag it all into a timeline at the bottom. And then you can export that as a WAV file or a MIDI file straight into a DAW. Or you can just play along with it. It sits as an external bit of software, so you don't have to run it into a plugin. But yeah, you can just take that MIDI file, drag it straight into your DAW, and then yeah, if you want to use your own MIDI samples, you can. But for people like me who have always like been mystified by drum programming, this was super, super simple.
It's an important thing to invest in, like you know, good drums. So if you want to sort of write songs at home, I think it can really make a big difference. It sounds like Easy Drum has been absolutely fantastic for you.
Yeah, and you know, never pay for something instantly. You know, always take the free trial, because no doubt they'll send you a discount voucher, which they just did. So 20% off.
There you go.
So try it free, and then get your discount voucher.
Can I just say, boys, that actually one of the things that I have been doing since I haven't been on the podcast was listening to your home recording podcast. I didn't listen to any of the regular episodes about guitars and that, but I did listen to every single episode of the whatever it was called, Matt and Joe Make a Song. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Really good. For someone who, you know, I do a bit of home recording, but I don't really care about it that much. I thought it was very engaging, a really well laid out series, and taught me a lot of things about what you were doing to make the song.
No, thanks, MPAC.
Yeah, it was really good, really good.
No, thanks, MPAX. Yeah, enjoy that series. I think we've spoken about it a lot since we've done it because we had such a good time making it. But we are going to continue. We are going to come back to that show and maybe come up with a different scenario, a different idea, maybe get the listeners to send in some things that I'll work some magic on. We'll see. But it shall return in some form. I've actually been having a great time with Addictive Drums 2 since I got it. I ran into a small problem the other day. I made a bass part, which was essentially three bars. It looped on three bars of six and then a bar of seven.
You've lost me already.
Yeah, it was three bars of six and a bar of seven. But I
is
wanted
that what average punk rock sounds like?
Yeah, sure, yeah. And I wanted the drums to play across it in four. So I programmed the drums in 23/4, which would be the longest, you know, version of three bars of six, one bar of seven. And I was like, fantastic, right, we've got that all set up. Now I just need to play it in. So I like start the track and then it's on the little metronome. It's like, do you want a count in? I'm like, yeah, no problem. Count in one bar, which is of course now 23. So I just have to sit there and wait for 23 beats before I could start playing, which yeah, definitely. Yeah, had its issues.
That is a crazy time signature.
Honestly, it sounds normal when you hear it. It's just to get the drums playing across it.
I'm sure we spoke about it on that. But when you're like, oh, look, I couldn't bear to do anything in 4/4, so hit 6/8, I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to count that. It's like
6/8 is just threes, isn't it?
Yeah, just three. Basically.
Like a waltz is in 6/8, kind of, right? So
we're talking to, you know, a guitarist here that basically plays one note with a reverb and then sort of maybe in three. I'm looking at tabs in three times.
Matty's songs are basically just like, oh, here's a drum beat, and I spent ages putting together this drum beat, and then basically I hit the space drum once, and
yeah,
that was it. That was all I needed to do. It sounded great.
My favorite notation is free time. Like, yep. That's what I've got, you know, no time signature at all. You can do what you want.
I held the microphone up to the cat. The cat meowed and it went through the space echo along to the drums.
I went to see a fella once who had like a load of effects on a table, and he used to get a jack and just press it against his veins on his arm and then sample in all that stuff and just make weird noises. Yeah. Andy Sounds Selby, cool. His name was. Great musician. Really weird show. Really weird show.
Jay, were you there when I don't know if you were there or not. Our friend Matt, not Matt Knight, our other friend Matt, was doing a DJ set in a hotel, and one of the acts that was opening was a geezer cutting his own hair while doing music. And part of his act was to hold the microphone to the scissors and then just put a really long delay on the snipping sound of the
it was just
weird. It was in the lobby of a hotel and there was just like hair all over the floor. It was incredibly weird.
I didn't see that time, but I did go and see him do another one, and in a very similar vein, I drove there and I parked in this like kind of weird industrial underground car park that's really near this hotel. And it's just all concrete. It's concrete everywhere in this underground car park. And after the show, I was walking back to the car and I was like, it's a very weird noise coming down here. And basically I got to my car and just by where I was parked, there were three geezers who had just played at the show, who had taken their synths down into the car park and were like playing and recording whatever it was that they were doing down there. And all the reverb and stuff was like, it sounded amazing.
That's actually very cool.
Well, so it sounded great. And then basically I went back and I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I went and the following week or the following fortnight, whenever it was. And one of the fellas who was recording in the car park that night was there again. And I spoke to him and I was like, oh man, I saw you recording like in the car park last week or whenever. Like, well, what was that about? It sounded great. He was like, oh yeah, thanks for pointing it out. Basically, I'm doing this project at the moment called 13, where I play one note for 13 minutes in 13 different car parks. And I was like, okay. And he was like, yeah, I pay one note in 13 minutes in 13 different car parks. And basically, when I'm finished, I'm just going to put those all into one track, and then that will be a 13-minute song that goes out. And I'm like,
well,
what are you talking about?
Like, it's such a good idea. It could have been so good.
Completely, right up until he was like, yeah, they just all go on one track and then I'll just put that out on my Bandcamp. And I was like, oh, no. Mate, like, so close. But, you know, okay, well, you know, everybody likes different things, so fair enough.
I did see a video once of a guy with a practice pad playing in 7-Eleven, in a 7-Eleven, on the 7th of the 11th.
Yes.
For 7 minutes and 11 seconds.
Very good.
Which I thought was absolutely fantastic.
Very good.
You know, that's the kind of project I like. You know,
time-based. Very specifically time-based projects.
I've just found it on metalinjection.net. Playing a 7-Eleven polyrhythm inside a 7-Eleven on July 11th at 7-Eleven. Absolutely ridiculous.
Amazing.
I have not found your car park man, Jay, unfortunately.
I'll see if I can find it.
I can't wait for, you know, pubs and venues to be open, because I'm pretty sure in London there is a modular synth jam night, which I definitely want to go to and to just see a load of people turn up with different modules and just go, oh, let's plug it in, see what happens. I'm like, I'm in.
Well, Jay and I went to one. We went to, can you remember what it was called, Jay? We went to Brighton Uni for that synth festival thing.
Yeah, no, I can't remember what it's called. It was just called like the Great British Synth Meetup or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think it was just called like Synth Meet or something like that.
Synth Fest, Analog Synth Fest or something like that.
It's a whole other world. It's, you know, you think a guitar show is confusing. There was just so much stuff. Well, in fact, we talked about this before, because we talked about the room that was Video Synthesis.
Didn't go in there. I was gutted I missed
it. It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, but you know, it was pretty cool. There was just like a lot of people sitting around clearly appreciating what was going on, and then me in there like, what is this? Like, you've got this basically an entire wall of electronics to make a picture that looks like something from, you know, adding from, you know, and the BBC Micro computers. It was very odd, but they seemed to be into it, so each to their own.
I see.
Yeah, indeed.
Very cool. Now, goodness me, we're so far into this podcast, we haven't even started the main topic yet.
Do the news. I reckon the news will fit in the time that we got left.
Okay. All right.
Let's do the topic in the Patreon.
Okay, we can do the topic in the Patreon. We were going to do some questions, but let's, we can do that.
They've all switched off. They've had enough.
Matt Knight, would you like to talk about the first news item?
Yes, I can. I'm assuming you want me to talk about the new Wampler pedal, the Ratsbane Distortion. So this is Brian Wampler's take on the classic Proco Rat. I really like Brian Wampler for doing this kind of stuff, because he's like, look, this is my take on it. It's a great circuit. I've been making similar or modding them. I mean, he wrote a book on, you know, he was one of the original sort of DIY modders, and he's like, loads of people asked me to make one, so here you go. And I watched a bunch of demo videos, some great ones out there, and it sounds bloody fantastic. Rat pedal was one of those ones that I sort of never really got into it until recently. I was like, until really I tried the Asabi when we spoke about that, I think for Gear of the Year, which has the large mouse analog plug-in, and I was like, this is the perfect mixture of just a really good distortion that's just a little bit fuzzy, you know, super smooth, and I'm sort of going, why haven't I got something like this on my
have you never got into rats at all then? You've never had one on your board?
No. Well, actually, that's a lie. I did have which I sold to you, Joe, which you then sold, and then I really wanted back, which was the Arc-Effex Soothsayer, which was a Proco Rat type pedal.
Is that what that was?
And I always thought it was really good, but then I was sort of I was always plugging it in next to my Op Amp Big Muff, which is kind of similar. And I was going, I really want that sound, but I can't put this massive Big Muff on my pedal board for fear of it, one, breaking, or two, it's just too massive. And I was like, oh, I just need to go back to the rat tile thing. And then just forgot about it for ages until that Asabi pedal. And I was like, this is definitely a type of pedal I need to get back into. It's a shame that it's a mini pedal, you know. I've got, but
I mean, you can always get it in cable form from Proco themselves.
Yes, that is true. The rat pedal in a cable.
The rat tail.
The rat tail does exist. But actually, I think this is very, very cool. It's got his take on it. So effectively, you've got a couple of different switches to add some distinct gain choices. So you've obviously got the stock mode, and then you've got a couple of turbocharged gain stages. And then the voice just changes a little bit of the compression and clipping. So it just gives you enough alternatives. But yeah, I'm sort of really into it. I think it sounds great. That sort of classic 80s. I mean, you forget how long the Rat's been a pedal. It's been around for a very, very long time.
It's one of the OGs.
It is. And yeah, obviously a lot of people go on about the kind of original, well, not the original, but the classic 80s LM308 chip version. And this is kind of based on that very, very sort of special model. So yeah, and incredibly good price, $149. So I think he's really cranking out some amazing stuff at the moment. So yeah, super pleased to see that out there. And if you want a rat style pedal, this is absolutely the one to go for.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a few things that are going to be kind of the quality and have the attention to detail that anything that Brian Wobbler turns out. So
yeah, I think, you know, just to kind of actually, I guess, round it off, just going back to his website. So obviously, I think maybe late last year or early this year, PlexiDrive Mini. Obviously, he's got the Bell Overdrive, which I think is based on the Blues Breaker. And then the Tumnus, which is obviously his clone. So you've got a, you know, the whole gain range available in Wampler mini pedal form, which is fantastic.
Yeah, very cool indeed. Well, it'll be interesting to see. Certainly there are a number of videos. It sounds fantastic from the videos, but it'll be interesting to see as it sort of works its way into the world and onto pedal boards how much it becomes kind of a contender, because you know, it's quite a well-trodden path, the Rat. There are an awful lot of options out there for it. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this one does. Now, the other kind of big news item for this week is Dave Mustaine returns to Gibson or becomes a part of Gibson. And he's becoming a brand ambassador, the same as dear old Slash. So, you know, Gibson, once again, aiming for the fresh new talent with Dave Mustaine. But it looks like kind of three or four models, I think, that they're kind
of...
Four.
There's four.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you say, like, aiming for fresh new talent, but people will be into this in the same way that, you know, they're buying the Slash Les Pauls, they're buying the Joe Bonamassa stuff. You know, this is a big deal and people will definitely buy these guitars that are coming out.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I don't really know. This is going to maybe sound a bit naive, but like, I don't really know anything about Megadeth.
No, me neither. I watched like, that Christmas joke thing that they did for Saturday Night Live a few years ago, but that's about it.
The only thing I really know about them is that my next door neighbour, Jonathan, when we were growing up, really didn't like his parents. And when they would go out, he would turn up... I forget what the album was called. I think it was Euthanasia by Megadeth. He would like turn it up super loud as a way of like being rebellious against his parents. But because they were out, I don't think it really made that much difference.
I see.
I've just remembered. I did have a Megadeth record at one point. I don't know what happened to it. I guess I probably sold it at some point, but I had the Megadeth Less Than Jake split 7-inch.
Oh, yeah.
which was a real record. It wasn't a bootleg or anything. It was legit. And it was All My Best Friends Are Metalheads, the classic Less Than Jake song, and was on one side. And then, yeah, The Disintegrators, which is a cool song name, by Megadeth was on the other side. And apparently it came about from... when they were on, here we go, Megadeth, not a bootleg, official release. It was sold during the Ozfest 98 tour, which featured Megadeth, and the Warped Tour 99, which featured Less Than Jake. The two bands were label mates at Capitol Records at the time. Very weird, very weird. But yeah, I had that record, but that is, I think, literally the only Megadeth record that I've ever... well, listen to, I guess. I really don't know. I guess I probably should. I mean, you know, I'm sure that Megadeth fans won't thank me for making the connection. But as I talked about 18 months or so ago, I got really into early Metallica. So I'm sure there's no reason why I wouldn't like Megadeth. I just don't really know where to start. If anybody's got any recommendations on where to start with Megadeth, then please let us know in the comments below.
I was thinking that record's got to be worth loads of money. Like, two iconic bands, they only did 500 copies. Lowest it sold for on Discogs, £3.38.
Well, there you go.
Oh, dear. Oh,
well, it looks like the Dave Mustaine collection is going to span acoustics and electrics, and it's going to be across Gibson, Epiphone, and Kramer, which is pretty
interesting.
Yeah,
I just saw there's a Kramer. That is cool.
It is. So it looks like two Gibson flying Vs, one Kramer flying V, Vanguard, which, if anything, looks more classic than the... than the Gibson flying Vs, the pair of Gibson flying Vs, you know, which are coming in the Rust in Peace 30th anniversary flying V, which is in a green burst, or rather fetching green burst, and a metallic silver standard Dave Mustaine flying V. The thing that really got my attention is the very tasteful CF100 Gibson acoustic in blood burst, which is actually just a very tasteful burgundy to black burst. The scratch plate in place of sort of, you know, Gibson's normal sort of bird covered acoustic plate, appears to have skulls on a chain instead, which, you know, is fine. It's obviously Dave Mustaine's guitar, but the acoustic itself, absolutely gorgeous looking, lovely sort of reverse double triangle inlays. Everything about that guitar I'm absolutely into, except for the scratch plate. I wish it had a normal one. And then
it's really funny because if the scratch plate, even with that scratch plate, like from a distance, it kind of looks like you know, like cowboy sort of shirt design, you know, like they have like roses and stuff. The only thing that makes it kind of metal, again, from a distance, is that it's got like a skull on the headstock, I think. But if it didn't have that, if someone was like, oh yeah, this is a signature for like a country guitar player, I'd be like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, really, really nice. It doesn't really stand out particularly as like, this is a metal guitar, despite having skulls on it and being in bloodburst.
Yeah, exactly. I think it looks fantastic. Obviously, it's got, by looks of it, quite modern tuners. I'd love it if it just had some nice sort of, you know, perloid button tuners on there. That would be quite tasteful. But, you know, it's a really interesting, unique shape, the CF100, which is a kind of single cut with that sharp ES175 style cutaway. I love it. Really, really lovely.
That's a question for your Facebook group, Joe. What is the most metal acoustic?
What is the most metal acoustic? There you go, listeners. Check. Let us know on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. What is the most metal acoustic? Would it be Fender with the original Strata acoustic things? They were pretty.
Oh, with the plastic back.
Yeah. No. Would they have a plastic back?
Yeah. Didn't they have like a ovation style kind of bowl back style?
Ooh, damn.
I believe so.
Maybe. Yeah, well, let's see. Listeners, let us know. Let us know on the Facebook group. But that does actually, that is all the time we have this week. So you can, of course, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/guitarnerds for an entire extra episode now and every week. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you'll get this episode ad-free and early every week. $5 will get you access to the Patreon special episode and our entire back catalogue. And $10 will get you the lot. Plus, I'll send you my thanks at the end of every episode. You can find us on all of your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.
I spend all Fred Fatigue, Paul Drew, Ian Manning, Russell Healy, Kristen Abbott, Diana Yogi, the guitarist, Carl Harris, Cloud Lifter, Todd Simons, Joe Hart, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Shane M, Jeffrey West, Eric Emma, Samuel Frost, Brian Iza, Kevin Vandalinda, Jacob Mickey, Andy Manley, Scott Epping, Robert Butterworth, Simon Billboard, Marcus Al Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Christian Lund Hansen, Keith Adams, Michael McVeigh, Eric File, Ryan McDermott, Merrick Peters, Joe Puttick, Richard Subwell, Jack Cutlock, Ed Sayers, A. Matthews, Kytopia, The Band, Sean Armo, John Anglin, Rob Gould, Tucker Abbott, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Burke, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Blake Wyland, Christopher Loseth, Hans Ams, Derek Rich, Rob Nordman, Steve Burkle, J.D. Short, Brad Page, Andy McKenzie, Robert Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, and Rude Grant.